And welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. And today's show is about juvenile justice and Kodiak Teen Court. A juvenile in this context is someone under the age of 17, 17 and under, 18 and under?
18 and under.
18 and under. Alaska typically ranks higher than the national average when it comes to things like juvenile arrests and detaining juveniles when they're convicted of crime, both violent and property crimes. And in fact, according to the National Center for Juvenile Justice, Alaska has nearly double the number of detained youth than the entire country per capita. But that doesn't mean that Alaskan youth are without alternatives. Kodiak Teen Court is a program here where youth peers serve as judges, prosecuting attorneys, defense attorneys, and fill many, many other roles in real criminal cases involving juveniles. So here in the studio to talk about Kodiak Teen Court, we have a lot. It's a full studio, so bear with me. We have Fernando Escobar, the president of the Kodiak Teen Court Board of Directors, Peyton Callahan, who's the VP and a judge with Kodiak Teen Court, Tessa Davis, who's secretary and an attorney, and Andrew Ott, who is the legal advisor and the instructor for Kodiak Teen Court. Welcome, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
All right. Okay. So we got to do this fast because you guys need to get back to class. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So let's just start off with the big question then. Why is Kodiak Teen Court important? And we'll start with Fernando.
Kodiak Teen Court is a diversion panel for youth who prefer to go, who don't want to go through, let's say, the Alaska court system or necessarily through the juvenile system, going through that entire process. Teen court, we usually try to, we get our cases referred from the Division of Juvenile Justice in Kodiak, the state courthouse, or anywhere else, even on the island, any of the villages. And from there, we take on the case, and it usually can take us usually about 6 months to get it all wrapped up from the intake process all the way to the case night. And we're pretty much, it's a more, we use restorative justice, and we try, rather than trying to punish the client or the defendant or the offender, we want them to understand and learn from their mistake so that they don't repeat the same mistake, or that they don't repeat, or they don't make other mistakes, which could lead to more legal problems. And so that's why we are here, especially in Kodiak, since we're rural. We do need one. We always have youth who always offend or who always do commit some type of crime here on the island. So we usually get a lot of cases, a good amount of cases from DJJ because we have a good relationship with them. So.
So how did each of you get involved? And we can start with Andrew because you probably have the most institutional knowledge with this. So how did you get involved and how did you recruit these three here?
Well, pretty much Judge Cole called me one day, who was at Steve Cole, the attorney at the time, and said, "Hey, I need help." I didn't have time at the time to do it. But then about 5 years later, I picked up the gavel to be the legal advisor for the youth court program. So that was about 2012. And every year we do classes, and this is really primarily the purpose is not only to talk about what youth court does and teen court in particular here, but also recruiting for new members coming into the program. And I will be starting a class, introductory law class and civics class on November 6th this year, Mondays and Wednesdays, 6 to 8 p.m., and we'll be going through about 10 weeks of coursework and then a bar exam in January and then swearing-in ceremony, and then we have new recruits to utilize in the program. But that's the important part for our recruitment. And then secondly is that we get the results of people like Fernando and Peyton and Tessa here who represent the organization and have done so not only at this level here locally, but also statewide. Fernando is part of the Youth Court, United Youth Courts of Alaska, if I remember correctly. So, and we just came back from a conference last weekend from there in Anchorage, where we met with all these different youth courts around the state. So we don't live in our own little, we live on an island, but we don't live without other youth courts in Alaska. And it's kind of cool to be able to interact with people from Nome, which has a totally different justice system than we do, or Anchorage and Mat-Su, versus, let's say, Southeast and Juneau and Ketchikan. So it's a great little organization. What I like to teach is public speaking is the number one thing. Mm-hmm. number two, a little bit about civics. We know we go through the existential moment of why do we have law? You know, why can't we just be chaos? And how do we get there? And how does our constitution that drives us through this process get us to where we're at here with youth court? Mm-hmm. And then what does youth courts fit in the system and so on? So that's what they learn through this class. And I enjoy teaching. I have guest speakers coming in. I have the district attorney's office, the public defender coming in. I have police officers coming in. I have the Division of Juvenile Justice coming in. The judge comes in. So it's just not me alone. There's a lot of players involved with the process.
So this sounds pretty intense. So Peyton and Tess, I'll give you a chance to chime in here. What about what Andrew just described? You two were like, oh, yes, we are totally doing this.
Well, so originally he had come into our history class in eighth grade, and I had always heard about teen court and always been interested in it. And he came in and he talked about it, and I was really interested in law at the time anyways. And so it really appealed to me. And obviously how we recruit is not as intense as that, but I mean.
Sounded good to me.
And my experience was a little bit different because I did go through during COVID. So there were two people in my class, me and another girl, and it was a super compressed version. So I think we covered all of the material in what, like a month, 4 weeks? Yeah. Wow. So it was a lot. But I think Tessa can speak on the more traditional way that Mr. Ott does it.
Yeah, how did you get involved, Tessa?
Yeah, I got recruited last year. I had, like, just moved to Kodiak, and I was in my history class, and these kids came in and were like, join teen court, and it was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. Like, what an amazing system that's just good all around, and I'm willing to do the work to get in there. So it was really awesome because I would move from Wyoming, which doesn't have a youth court system at all. And the classes weren't even difficult. Mr. Ott was a wonderful teacher, and we had fun. We did the goggle simulation with the cars, and that was a lot of fun. And then studied for the bar exam, and then got to work on cases and have fun. And there's a lot of cool people in the teen court system. So
what are the typical kinds of cases? Fernando, you touched on this just a little bit, but what are the typical cases you get? Because what I read, these are real criminal cases, real charges, and it sounds like you guys stay pretty busy.
Mm-hmm. So we usually, our cases that we get, or offenses that we get, are usually ranging low level, usually misdemeanors, but they usually involve tobacco to marijuana cases, minor possession, and then alcohol cases as well, and then criminal mischief. I'm not sure if I'm forgetting another one.
Assault.
One of you is.
Oh, yeah, assault.
Oh, yes, assault too. And it's pretty much what we do. It's usually what you would think of what a teenager would normally do, like vandalism, which would fall under mischief, and yeah, usually majority of our cases are usually sometimes vandalism, and it's simple, and we can get through them. We can all agree on it, and we can finish it up.
So what are the particular challenges of being a prosecuting attorney? Tessa, you're an attorney. Are you usually prosecution or defense, or does that matter?
I like to do both sides to get experience for both. But I think defense and prosecution are both equally challenging in their own ways. Prosecution, you work more with trying to figure out what they did wrong and why they need to fix their actions and defense. You need to especially understand why they did it and understand, like, the restorative justice of the offense and how they can make up for their actions and learn.
It's a weird question, maybe, but what does this do to your social life? It's a small town, right? And you see these people, you know, every day. And surely there are conflicts of interest, mm-hmm. Perhaps, or if you know someone. What are those lines?
I think that's definitely an interesting aspect to look at within teen court. Something that, you know, all of our youth involved in the program have to understand is that there is confidentiality within all of it. So before we do a case, we all have to sign a confidentiality agreement. And so that's something that, you know, is really, I think, helps with the social life aspect of it all. Because, I mean, yes, sometimes it is a little awkward when you see the person that you were prosecuting in the school hallway. But I think we all have a mature view on it that, you know, this, it's not just social gossip. Like, you can't, you know, this is someone's life, and we're there to help that person, not berate that person or, you know, be negative in any sort of way. So I think everyone has a really mature view on it, and so I think that definitely helps with the social aspect of it all.
You brought up confidentiality. Without breaking confidentiality rules, can you talk about, in general terms, what was the most difficult case that you personally have been a part of?
I think it's my very first case. It was an assault, and so it was really difficult at the time because it was during COVID. It was my first case, and I always look back to it of what I could have improved on, but it was concerning at the time of the offender and the victim and so on. And it shouldn't have happened. That was the first thing. And that was, I would say, it was probably one of my most difficult cases. But another one would be one that I had last year. And I'm not trying to talk too much about it, but the offender, they needed to get, they needed help. And so we try to guide them in a direction of trying to get help. And so that's what we try to do, at least. And yeah, and I don't know if Payne or Tessa.
My first year as well, I had a really difficult, it wasn't so much the case that was difficult, but the parent. It was a very negative experience. The parent was incredibly difficult to work with. So that was something that was really interesting to come into for my first ever case. I do think that that helped me learn in the long run. But I also have had a few cases where, because obviously we're dealing with youth that generally don't have the greatest home lives. And so I've had a few cases where the offender had some disabilities or severe mental illness. And I wouldn't say that makes the case more difficult, but it definitely makes the case feel more real. I think you really feel empathy for that person, and it really ties into, like, these people are still people even though they're making decisions, and ultimately they just need help with guidance, and we're there to help do that. So I think
I haven't really had any particularly difficult cases. I've only been in this program a year.
You're that good of an attorney.
I've worked on only a few cases, so I really can't say anything. But
you all just came back from a conference, so you have a sense of what your statewide peers are going through. And so how you know, what I guess first, what is kind of your take on the juvenile justice system in Alaska in general, seeing it from where you're at?
I think it's one of the, it's definitely one of the evolved ones, especially here in the state. I know that in the lower 48, they have some restorative justice going on, but here in the state of Alaska, it's so unique because we have 8 different youth courts, if I'm correct, 8 different youth courts across the state, you know, 1 in Anchorage, 1 in the Matsu Valley, 1 in Nome, and then Ketchikan, Juneau, and then here in Kodiak, and then the Kenai Peninsula. So we all usually meet together with the UICA, but going back to your question about the juvenile system here in Alaska, it's a great opportunity to have youth courts here because we provide the restorative justice that's needed, or at least one area of restorative justice. I know that the Division of Juvenile Justice, they try to provide their restorative justice as well, especially on the mainland. And you know, with Teen Court, because it's all peer work, we usually leave an impact on the defendant or the client, and we always try to make them understand that, you know, we don't want you to do this again, and we're here to help in any way that we can. You just need to ask us, and we can get anything that you need, pretty much.
Can you talk some more about restorative justice? What you know, there are some criticisms of restorative justice is that maybe it trivializes the crime. Maybe the perpetrator of the crime feels restored, but maybe the victim doesn't feel as restored, as in a consequence based. I don't know what the right legal term, but as opposed to restorative justice. So what is being restored?
So I think one of the big things with restorative justice is it's restoration for all. So the victim, the offender, and in youth restorative justice, we like to as well restore the parent or the community that was involved. So I think a common misconception with restorative justice is that it's just for the offender, when really, especially in teen court, we ask the victim, what do you feel is a proper sentence, or what do you feel was done to you, and like, how can you be restored by what we can do? And so I think that especially when we're talking about youth, our brains aren't fully developed. We make mistakes, and sometimes, and I think restorative justice, our main goal is to help the people involved in the case and restore the damage that was done. And so I think with youth, it's really the better alternative to punitive punishment, because I mean, our brains are so malleable, we can absorb information so easily. So it's, you know, those pathways that may not be fully connected can be rewired. And so I think that's why it's so important to go the restorative justice route with youth. But yeah, that's just my take on it.
And I'll just add here, restorative justice in Alaska follows 3 main guideposts, if you will. Accountability for the action of the offender, community safety, so we make sure that we have the involvement of the victims, and then secondly, competency development. This is much more critical than anything else above the 3 prongs, which is how do we as a agency try to deal with an offender who has unique issues, and how do we address those issues in a way that the person can learn from and, more importantly, not reoffend again as an adult. And that that sort of competency development sometimes will involve parents. Mm-hmm. We did the parenting Love and Limits. And that involved parents being involved with a program for a period of time. So,
You've brought up recidivism. Is there a pretty clear connection between how successful restorative justice is and recidivism rates? Is this getting into the weeds too much?
4%.
Okay.
Yeah. So the studies have shown that if people are used youth courts in Alaska, and particularly Kodiak, we have a 4% recidivism rate.
Let's see, what else? Oh, back to this conference, too. What are you seeing is the future of these kinds of programs? Fernanda, you mentioned that the Alaska program is one of the more evolved ones. How can it evolve further?
I think if it could probably evolve further if we begin sharing ideas and connection. So in Nome, what Misra had mentioned earlier, in Nome they do circle courts. So rather than in a formal court hearing, everybody just gathers in a circle. You know, there's a facilitator, there's the offender or the offenders, the victim, if there is one, which usually there is, and then any community members and so on. And they just all talk it out, and then they come to a resolution for the offender, what the offender can complete. And so that's just one thing that happens up there in Nome. I know that in Juneau, they've started to change their terms as to how they refer to a client or the attorneys. Like they use the youth advocate or the community member. Usually, I can remember one of them is the youth advocate. And so, like, just small changes or brief changes. And I know with Anchorage and Mat-Su, they're slowly learning to understand how each youth court does and how they can expand on restorative justice. And so I know that with restorative justice, Peyton and I took a class last year, and we learned three concepts, which was circles, conferencing, and mediation. And those all usually fall under restorative justice. And like I mentioned, Nome is doing circles. And so I'm thinking about doing circles here in Kodiak, which would be another alternative for our youth to, you know, rather than being nervous or not understand that they're in a courtroom, we could just be a little more informal. You know, we can meet together, understand, you know, be like just try to build that connection with everybody. But expansion-wise, it's just all about sharing those ideas, and it takes quite a bit of time, and so until we get an idea in another youth court and so on. Like right now, I know with the United Youth Courts of Alaska, we just had our elections done for our officers and our youth representatives and the directors, all the adult directors from each youth court. We all meet together every 2 months. And so we try to talk, you know, figure out what's going on with the state, what's going on with our budget, how each youth court is doing. And, like, right now, one of our concerns has been Fairbanks. Fairbanks does not have a youth court and unfortunately closed down at the beginning of the pandemic. And so we've been trying to figure out what can we do in Fairbanks to get that youth court started back up. And so that's where we are right now. We're trying to provide more restorative justice, you know, more in the state. And we're slowly getting to the idea of, you know, connecting with each other. Mm-hmm. I know with Kodiak, there was a time when we didn't have enough judges. And so we had to reach out to Anchorage and Mat-Su to borrow some of the judges through Zoom. And so we had two judges on Zoom, and then we'd have the actual, you know, the arraignment and sentencing in the courtroom. And so that's what happened. And we were slowly connecting with each other. And then when we debriefed as a group, all the attorneys and the judges, you know, we learned some things and we expanded on certain areas. You know, we expanded our knowledge in restorative justice.
Let's talk about the, I'm a teacher. So what are you guys learning? Are you looking at careers in law or criminal justice, or if not, what are these skills that you're learning that you know, looking forward personally, what are you going to take from Kodiak Teen Court?
At the UYCA conference, we take many classes that expand our knowledge on restorative justice. I personally took a class on peer mediation, and it really focused on how resolving disputes and keeping situations calm and learning how to work with people in a way to reach a conclusion and solve your problems in a way that works for everyone as much as possible. And there were other classes. There was one class that really stood out to me. It was the reentry into real life after coming out of jail or a bad negative experience with a criminal charge. And it really shed light on how criminals and offenders have a hard time coming back after that, because there's so many things, like so many opportunities are shut down after you get a DUI on your record forever. And it's really unfortunate how the reality is. And I'm really happy that teen court has such a restorative justice system, so teens can move on with their life and not be punished by the mistake they made when they were 16 for the rest of their lives.
Peyton, what about you?
I think that one of the biggest things that I've learned from teen court is just how to be empathetic, and also just social skills, honestly. I feel like I have learned so much about how to communicate with people, how to understand their situation, and how to really take that into account. Also, learning how to be unbiased as a judge. When I took my judge's training, obviously that's something that you have to be as impartial as possible. And, you know, there's always the question of, can you totally be completely impartial? But I have really learned about biases and how they affect your thinking. I think this program has given me so much, and I've really learned an enormous amount from it. And like Tessa said, the conference was really educational for me. Coming back from that conference, there's so many ideas and things I learned from there that I think we can now implement into our court. So,
very cool. We have less than a minute, so we'll take this time to plug. All right, Teen Court is starting back up on November 6th, and there's no sign-up. People can just show up.
Yes, but I'll be also encouraging them to call in at 486-3550, which is the office number, and leave a name so that and phone number so we can at least get in contact with you and remind you that we have class. But yes, they can just show up.
And the syllabus looks great. I'm looking at the syllabus right now. Law, Constitution, mock hearings, and you guys are going to watch My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. So they learn everything. What they come back with is you can't do that.
Yeah.
What's a ute?
Well, thanks to my guests to talk about Kodiak Teen Court and Juvenile Justice in Kodiak and in Alaska. Fernando Escobar, Peyton Callahan, Tessa Davis, and Andrew Ott. Thank you so much for spending your time on Talk of the Rock this week.
Thank you.
Yep.